love midnight movies, don't you? But can you handle midnight movies 24 hours a day?
Your death will be indescribable.
Find out on Black Flag TV. The first viral television on the web, Black Flag TV is entirely dedicated to haunting horror, science fiction, and cult movies. Broadcasting live, 24 hours a day, obscure independent movies and classic horror. Make Black Flag TV your sanctuary for the horror genre.
They're coming to get you, Barbara.
Visit us now, blackflag.tv.
Hi, Andy's grandma. We're here to record a new episode of Night of the Living Podcast. Is Andy home?
Oh, me so sorry. He no home right now. You follow me.
Oh, Andy's room smells kind of weird.
Yeah, really strange. He left his computer on over here, too.
Hey, guys, why do you think Andy might have this mask of human skin? That's weird.
Maybe you guys know why there's this machete in the corner.
His computer's just knife enthusiast websites and American Apparel. Oh, wait, there's another website here. Palaver.com.
Palaver.
Okay, Palaver. Whatever, I
Palaver.
Think... Yeah, he's definitely got the serial killer board up right under Night of the Living Podcast discussions.
Oh, Jesus. Maybe we should get the hell
maybe
out of here.
Maybe we should go. Yeah, I think we should.
Hey, guys. You ready to record?
If you're a fan of horror films, you should check out Night of the Living Podcast at NOTOP.com, part of the Palaver family.
Devour the Podcast is for mature audiences only.
Hello and welcome to episode 13 of Devour the Podcast. I'm your host, David, and with me as usual is Jamie.
Hello, everyone.
This is our first official episode as members of the Horror Palace Podcasting Network, so we're very excited about that. And as such, we will be doing things a little bit differently. So if you've listened to the show previously, bear with us because we're going to be explaining some things you probably already know, but it's for the new people who have not heard the show before. So usually, we start off the show with our introduction and a little bit of news, and we do two movies. It came from the instant queue and our feature presentation, and we will probably get off on various tangents about various things as we go along.
We do that.
Yeah, we totally do. It's even in the show description.
It's okay, though. That's what's fun.
Exactly.
You never know where we're gonna go.
Oh, yes. So, briefly, let's go ahead and tell the people about ourselves. Like I said, I'm David. I am the creator slash host of the show, also the creator of Devour the Blog, which is a WordPress site where I occasionally write reviews and articles and things about the horror genre. Not been writing recently because I've been working on the show quite a bit. Yeah, that's me. Jamie, why don't you go ahead and tell the people about yourself?
Well, let's see. I started out as a writer about the genre, so I did interviews and reviews and editorials, and then I moved on to doing some podcasting, and now I'm currently the director of marketing for Viscera Film Festival, as well as the CEO of the Chainsaw Mafia, and I am the general editor for horrormovies.ca, and now I'm here at Devour the Podcast, having a great time with David every week.
Yep. Yes, and
sometimes greater than others. We had to watch.
Yeah, we're gonna get
I
into
take
that.
Take full responsibility for what's about to happen, though. It was my choice.
I, you know what? I can't blame you this time because I'm the one who put it on the list. So.
Oh, bam!
Yeah. This is a joint effort of horribleness that happened. So yes, I have been writing reviews for going on, let's say, off and on about 8 years. I started off with a really terrible Angel Fire site way back in the day, and then I worked for a site called Joe Horror, which is, I believe, now Wildside Cinema. I wrote for them briefly, and then I worked for HorrorNews.net for a while, and I quit working for them because I just didn't have time, and I now do Devour the Blog when I have free time and the drive to actually sit down and write something, which recently hasn't been very high because I've been busy with the show. And if you follow me on Twitter, you'll see that I often post about how long the show is taking to edit. And last week, we were about a day behind on getting the show recorded. And I literally spent about 6 or 7 hours in front of my computer just editing the last week's show. It was a fucking nightmare. Yeah, I got it done, barely. And I actually got the show, I think the show was completely edited and put together and ready for release just after midnight Saturday morning. So it was a close one. But I got it done. Never again will I let that happen.
You're such a trooper.
And of course, I listened to the show again the next day, and I'm like, fuck. I hear awkward edits and things that I should have caught, but, you know, I'm always like that when I do editing. I notice every glitch and error I made, but, you know, if I don't release the goddamn show when I'm done with it, then it'll never get done because I'll be editing forever, so. Before we get into our InstaQ feature, again, I would like to say very excited to be joining the network, and for all of you new listeners, welcome to the show. I hope you enjoy it.
Oh, me too. I'm so excited, and big hi to everyone out there, and, you know, I hope you don't think we suck.
Yeah, I know. I hope so. I'm actually kind of excited because Midnight Corey is a member of the network, and he's actually, I've never actually heard any of his shows prior to joining the network, but he is by proxy the one who got me into podcasting, as he was the inspiration of the guys who inspired me to get into podcasting. So it's pretty awesome that I'm actually working with him. It's kind of a neat thing. So that's that. Let's go ahead and jump into the news for this week.
Be quiet a second, will you?
It's 8 o'clock in Los Angeles. It's 9 o'clock in Denver. It's 10 o'clock in Chicago.
In Baltimore, it's 6:42. Time for the 11 o'clock report.
Here's Johnny!
I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum.
Game over, man! Game over!
Your mother sucks cocks in hell.
So, first up on our news, and for those of you wondering, we get all the news from Blade Disgusting, because it's just the easiest place to get news. First up, the Vicious Brothers find more Grave Encounters footage. Another Cannes announcement, as Darklight Films is getting behind a sequel to the Vicious Brothers' absolutely generic and bland at Grave Encounters, which was apparently a massive success on VOD. I didn't write that, that was all Mr. Disgusting, and fuck him, because I liked that movie a lot. Already in pre-production, the terrifying new sequel follows a group of film students who break into a hospital from the first film to do their own paranormal investigation and quickly realize that the Grave Encounters was not just a movie, it was real. And I actually cut out a snarky comment that he made at the end of that article, and I didn't notice he made a snarky comment at the beginning of the article. Yes, as I've already said, I really enjoyed Grave Encounters. I did that for the very first episode of this show, which nobody should listen to because it sounds fucking terrible. That episode is horrible, horribly recorded, so don't listen to that episode, please. There's no saving that episode, unfortunately. But I really enjoyed Grave Encounters. I thought it was a cool movie, despite the overused YouTube demon face effect. I thought it was fun. So, have you seen Grave Encounters?
I have not.
You should check it
out. I was just about to say I have not seen it. I cannot comment, snarky or otherwise.
You know what? I enjoyed it because for a number of reasons. I like found footage movies for the most part.
I do too.
And it's almost a parody of Ghost Adventures in a sense. Like, that's the kind of vibe you get from all the characters, which I really loved because I think Ghost Adventures is both hysterical and kind of creepy at the same time.
Oh man, we love that show around
exactly.
My house.
Exactly. So if you're
we like to call Zach Big Swole because he's always flexing in front of the camera.
I know. Ghost Bros. That's what we call them. So if you're a fan of Ghost Adventures, you will totally probably love Grave Encounters because it is totally almost a parody of that show, except with more horror elements to it. So I personally really like it, and part of the reason I stopped reading Blade Disgusting a long time ago was because of their snarky commentary in news articles, and also because their user base just screams and wrings their hands at everything in the comments section, which just gets obnoxious after a while. But yeah, I've always had an issue with people who, like, if you're gonna report the news and make your snarky commentary after you've reported it, don't dump it in with your article. It's fucking ugh. It's unprofessional. I don't like that, but whatever.
Don't like it.
Yes, I don't like it. Next up on the news, production begins on Wrong Turn 5, and the cast is first cast is revealed. 20th Century Fox Home Entertainment has officially started production on the next installment of the horror genre hit Wrong Turn. I didn't know that they had gotten up to 4.
Okay, I was just about to say, are we at 5 already? Holy crap. I knew about 3, but I didn't know about 4. I'm behind.
Yes. So with Wrong Turn 5, director and writer Declan O'Brien, who is Wrong Turn 3, Left 4 Dead, Wrong Turn 4, Bloody Beginnings, and Sharktopus, returns to helm this third film in the franchise with Doug Bradley, best known for his role as Pinhead in Hellraiser, leading the cast. Camilla Arfwedson and Roxanne McKee from Game of Thrones. Jesus Christ, why is everyone on Game of Thrones suddenly in movies now? Also star...
This is what happened.
I know. Also star as it was first reported by Dread Central. And the synopsis is, in the next chilling chapter of Wrong Turn, a small West Virginia town is hosting the legendary Mountain Man Festival on Halloween, where throngs of costume partygoers gather for a wild night of music and mischief. But an inbred family of hillbilly cannibals kill all the fun when they trick and treat themselves to a group of visiting college students who are dying for a good time. Filming is underway in and near Sofia, Bulgaria, and is expected to end May 5th. Film is slated for release on Blu-ray and DVD later this year.
Okay, I suppose that could be interesting, I guess, but really, what inbred redneck hillbilly, whatever, throw in however many adjectives that you want there. What cannibalistic family do you know that's just going to go trotting out to this big party that happens every year in this town and start picking people off like it's fucking fast food?
I don't.
I mean, that just doesn't make any sense.
It's Wrong Turn 5.
Are you telling me I'm putting too much thought into it?
I think you're putting a little too much thought into this. I mean, I've only seen the first one and I have vague recollections of the first one.
I really liked the first one. And, you know, I've made comments before about mutants being too mutiny and them, you know, being all over the place. And there were some pretty inbred folks in the first one, but I enjoyed it. But I think it was the cast mainly, because I really liked Jeremy Sisto.
He was in that?
And yeah. And Elijah Dushku.
She was in it. Cause I think I watched it because she was in it.
Yeah. And Jeremy Sisto is always he always makes me watch something, you know, he stands behind me, twists my arm and forces me to do it. Get away, Jeremy. I'm trying to talk. but I did like the first one. The second one, I really didn't see the need to keep going, but I'm one of those people that, you know, I don't know. I mean, I think if you've done it and you've done it well, then, you know, do something else and do it well. You know, don't beat a dead horse.
I agree.
I'm not one of these franchise pushers that, you know, thinks that everything has to be a franchise. And I love, there are franchises that I love, Friday the 13th, but I'm, you know, I don't think that everything has to turn into a franchise.
Definitely. And I'm a little, at the one hand, I'm like, well, Doug Bradley's in it. That's awesome. But, you know, that doesn't say anything about whether the script is any good, because there was a news article when Hellraiser Revelations was coming out that Doug Bradley had turned it down because he didn't like the script. And I was like, and everyone's like, oh my God, Doug Bradley's not in this movie. It's going to be horrible. I'm like, did anybody see Hellraiser 8? Seriously, Doug Bradley's turning the script down because he thinks it's not good enough. Did he fucking read the script to Hellraiser 8? That was a piece of shit. Ugh. The less I think about that movie, the better, because it makes me angry.
Well, don't get angry. Don't think about it. Think about fluffy bunnies. Bloody fluffy bunnies.
So yeah, that was the hilarious little news bit that I remember when Revelations came out. And Revelations really isn't that terrible. I mean, on the scale of more or less terrible franchise that Hellraiser became after the first two, Revelations is hardly the worst of the series. It's not great, but it's not as horrible as 8 or 7 or 4 or part 3. I enjoy Inferno. Inferno is actually good. That's the only one I actually kind of like, because they did something interesting with it. But anyway, we'll talk about Hellraiser another day. Vampire lore forces tough decision in Blood of Eden. Palomar Pictures has acquired screen rights to Blood of Eden, a book series by young adult author Julie Kagawa. The series begins with The Immortal Rules, which Harlequin Teen published this week, says Deadline. And the synopsis is, The Immortal Rules is set in the future where humanity has been decimated by a deadly virus and exists primarily as a food source and slave class to vampires that run things.
Oh, that sounds like Daybreakers.
Daybreakers, yeah. The first book revolves around a young girl who is turned into a vampire and has to choose between her dreams of overrunning the vampire overlords or embracing the idea that she is now one of them.
Well, look for me on the edge of this edge of my seat, because that's where I am.
Yeah, I know, right? Palomar for principal Joni Sveff. I can't pronounce her name. Joni said, "It's simply a great story with an electrifying heroine. It makes the series an ideal subject for film adaptation." Julie's ability to familiarize the reader with this complex world in a few pages demonstrates the cinematic qualities of her imagination and complements my own sensibilities as a film producer. Really now? Because this totally sounds just like Daybreakers, except it's...
But with teenagers.
Yeah. Oh, Jesus Christ. I like vampire movies, but come the fuck on.
Is this going to be another Twilight? They don't sparkle.
Oh, God, I hope not. I really, really hope not. And finally, there's some nice news, I guess. Pixar to celebrate Dia de los Muertos. Pixar, responsible for such classics as Toy Story, Monsters, Inc., Finding Nemo, WALL-E, and pretty much every other movie that Disney has made that's been worth a shit the past 10 years, 15 years, has announced its latest project in development, setting a 2015 release target for a tune based on the Mexican holiday, Dia de los Muertos. Pixar chief John Lasseter made the announcement Tuesday at the CinemaCon stage, adding that Toy Story 3 director Lee Unkrich and producer Darla K. Anderson would head up the project. The other news from Pixar is the studio has a dinosaur movie called The Good Dinosaur set for May 30th, 2014, and has dated its untitled Pixar movie that takes you inside the mind. Yeah, takes you inside the mind for June 19th, 2015. That's bizarre. And Good Dinosaur hails from director Bob Peterson, who is co-director and writer of Up, writer of Finding Nemo, and is produced by John Walker of The Incredibles and The Iron Giant. So that sounds pretty awesome, actually, because I do like Pixar.
Yeah, and well, and the writing team, or the writer and the, rather, producer, put them together and make them a team. Mm-hmm. They have some pretty decent credentials on their list. So, you know, I enjoyed Nemo, I thought, and Up was really good.
You know, I didn't see Up. I think the last Pixar movie I saw was, I want to say The Incredibles, I think. Because I watched about 15 minutes of WALL-E and kept falling asleep. So I never finished
it. I never saw that.
Yeah, everybody raved about it, but I didn't finish it because I was bored to tears. Finding Nemo was good. But yeah, I enjoy Pixar. There's actually a documentary on Netflix Instant Watch, the Pixar story, which is really interesting. So if you like Pixar or you enjoy really good documentaries, that's a great documentary to check out. And I really like Monsters, Inc., so I think a Dia de los Muertos movie could be interesting from them.
I'll go along with that.
Yep.
I'll look forward to that.
Yes, indeed. So that'll be 2015 that we'll be seeing that eventually.
I have a long way to look forward to, but remind me in like 3 years.
Yeah, no kidding. All right, so that's it for the news. We're going to go ahead and jump into our It Came From the Instant Queue selection of In Search of Lovecraft.
It Came From the Instant Queue.
For News 23, we're going to bring you a look at H.P. Lovecraft, possible father to modern-day horror.
He admitted that his stories came from his dreams.
There are quite a few people who believe that all of this is true.
I'm a reporter. I report facts, not mumbo-jumbo.
Oh, God, what did she do?
How can you help us?
I'm a witch.
This is a magic attack.
Isn't living in a dangerous position?
That's why I've been through years of training.
This is prime time. I can even get my espresso.
I'm not sure you're ready to see this.
In Search of Lovecraft, this was released in 2008. The synopsis via IMDb is, while shooting a Halloween news story on horror writer H.P. Lovecraft, reporter Rebecca Marsh discovers that the fiction Lovecraft wrote is actually true and the creatures and cults described in his writing really exist. This was written and directed by David J. Hole. Denise Amricus is Amber Martin. Titus Bergstrom is Mike. And Jeff DeLucio is Brock James.
You should call this In Search of a Plot.
Jesus Christ.
Or In Search of Something to Keep Me from Going to Sleep for an hour and 38 minutes.
Hour and 38 minutes. And I watched an hour of this movie and I can't tell you what it was about because I don't know.
I was a trooper. I went all the way to the end. I still can't tell you. Actually, yeah, I get it, but it just...
Yeah, I don't know what the hell. This is just a bad movie. This is not at all good in any way, shape, or form.
No, it was bad. The acting was bad. The writing was bad. Poorly made. It was hard to look at. The sound was terrible.
Oh my God, the sound.
See, I knew the whole time I'm watching the movie that I'm thinking in the back of my brain, I'm going, David's going to have a fit. He's going to have a fit because there's no boom mic.
I will give the movie this much credit. It looks like they had a decent camera. That's about the only nice thing I can say about this, other than it was shot in and around San Francisco.
Well, they did have the best thing about the film, in my opinion, were the beautiful shots of San Francisco that they had. They had a really pretty shot of the bridge. They had some beach shots that were nice, like from the bay. That looked nice. And I think they put them in because they realized the rest of it was crap and they needed to, you know, temper it a little bit.
Yeah, I know. As the movie begins, and first off, the credit sequence looked fucking terrible. Holy shit, I could have produced something better on my computer than that. But there's just so many issues with this movie. There's footage from the 1920s or something that has sound which shouldn't have sound.
Thank you. I pointed that out when I was watching this movie last night. Someone said something like, someone was watching it with, I forget what they said, but they should have realized blah, blah, something.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, they should have realized that cameras back then didn't have sound attached, you know? And I'm like, do a little bit of research, just a little bit of research.
Yes.
Because at first I thought, when we first started, I thought, hey, this might not be that bad because they had the car so it looked like they might have had a pretty decent budget, you know, going in. And then it was just little things all over the place. And I can forgive a lot when it comes to production value.
Yeah.
If you keep me entertained or if you keep me interested. They did neither.
No, they did
neither. You know, and I suffered through the whole damn thing.
I know. I give you credit for that because I made it about an hour in and then turned it off. I couldn't do it.
It's a flaw. I can't turn something. It takes a lot for me to
turn a
movie.
You know what? I really
walk away.
It takes a lot for me to do the same, but it's like I couldn't do it anymore.
I don't blame you. I don't blame you. And I have to say that this is one movie that I will absolutely not recommend that anyone watch because I couldn't do that to anyone. I couldn't. And the story, this is what's sad, is that I don't think the story was a bad story. I think that it was just so poorly presented that no one is going to care.
Terribly written. I'm sorry. I don't mean to offend the filmmaker, but this was a horribly written story, horribly acted, terrible special effects. I mean, the computer graphics were fucking abysmal. I'm sorry. I've done better. And the old timey footage they did that was like, really? Seriously? That was really bad. I can do that
like
on my
computer. Like Instagram video? Or
that terrible. The fucking camera, it's supposed to be 1920 in those shots. There's no goddamn sound. That's not possible, for one thing. That pissed me off. And then
that really irked me because it doesn't take any amount of research at all to realize that that just was not technology
possible.
That was available at the time.
Exactly.
And, you know, if you and I know that just sitting here watching it, then that means others know it too. And they should have known it,
exactly.
You know, and if you don't know it, do some research. It's not that hard.
Yeah. And I will give them credit. The shot at the beginning where we're introduced to the news reporter, where she's the big Halloween thing. That's actually the Castro Halloween, which then no longer happens anymore because a couple of people got shot in like 2006, I want to say. But I was there that year. And I can attest that it really is just like that. It was just a fucking sea of people everywhere. So I will give them credit for that. And as that scene was going on, I was like, is this San Francisco? Because that looks a lot like the Castro Halloween. And then it's like, oh, it is San Francisco. And then that was about as much good graces this movie had for me. Because from there on, it was just, it was a downward sliding, just kept going downhill. Just because the writing was terrible. The acting was terrible. The goddamn sound.
Oh, the acting. And the sound was really bad.
Yeah.
And this is supposed to be... Well, you get the impression, well, through the entire movie, it's a POV shot from the cameraman's angle. Yet sometimes that angle just changes inexplicably, but he hasn't moved. And I'm thinking, like in the library, when they're in the library and he puts the camera down and you watch him walk away, then the next thing you know, you get a POV shot from him standing at the end of the aisle. And I'm like, well, wait a minute, but he left the camera back there. What am I looking through? Yeah. And then he comes back and picks up the camera. And I'm like, ah, well, what the hell?
Yeah, there's those weird, completely non-distinctive breaks in when we're watching the characters holding the camera versus an omnipotent third party who's watching the characters. It's just
there was not a lot of thought put into it, and that's why one of the things that really irritates me about filmmaking is when you don't put a lot of thought and you don't put a lot of effort into your product. And that is so, in those cases, I don't feel bad being totally honest about the fact that you, it is obvious you didn't put a lot of thought into it. You know, I don't want to offend anyone, but
this was a piece
for
of
for fuck's
shit.
Sake.
I'm sorry. You know? I mean, I hated Retard Dead, but I mean, at least Retard Dead had some competency behind it. I didn't like it. I thought it was a poorly made movie, but at least it had a competent flow and it was actually shot moderately well, despite the low budget camera product they had, because it did look kind of shitty. I mean, this one at least looked like it had a decent camera, but Jesus fucking Christ. I brought this issue up when we reviewed Retard Dead, that independent movies typically have sound problems. Super low budget movies have sound problems because they either don't think to get an external microphone or they just use the mic that's on the camera, which means it's really hard to hear things. And as you've already heard through the audio of the trailer that played prior to this, that's the sound quality throughout the movie. I didn't do anything to that trailer. That's just the sound you get throughout the entire movie. The sound is fucking terrible. I don't know what the fuck they were doing. I mean, they had a microphone. She's holding a microphone through various parts of this movie because she's a reporter. But
yeah, but it wasn't attached to anything.
It wasn't attached to anything. I mean, oh, God. And it's really, I understand that, you know, for some people, that, you know, making movies is something you want to do. I support that fully. But if you're going to spend the money on a camera, spend the money and get some way to do external audio recording. I mean, you can get some anything. Just look up online how to do a cheap boom mic and a cheap audio recording setup, because you need decent sound or else nobody will understand your movie and people will hate it because they can't fucking hear it.
Yeah,
although, honestly, the kind of fucking, the dialogue was so goddamn terrible, I don't.
Yeah, it was sort of a blessing that you couldn't hear everything here, and because the dialogue was bad, and I just didn't like the characters.
No.
I really didn't. I didn't give a shit what happened to any of them, you know, and I just, like, I don't know. I was pretty much miserable through the entire thing, and of the three people that were sitting in my house watching this movie, I was the only one that saw the whole thing. You know, so, you know, and I don't know. I think I deserve a medal for that or something.
You know, like, I will give you credit because like I said, I made it to about an hour in, and then I looked to see how much longer it was. I was like, oh no, there's another 38 minutes of this shit. And I fast forwarded too far to the credits, backed up, played it a little bit, and said, nope, don't care, and started playing a video game instead because I just couldn't do it. I couldn't.
I got to the hour. You had told me that ahead of time. I got to the hour mark and I was just like, wow, this is as far as he's made it.
Yeah.
I could stop right now and it'd be okay.
Yeah. I,
you know, even if you quizzed me, you wouldn't know if I was giving you the right answers.
I don't even know what the movie was about. I watched an hour of this and I don't know what it was about. It was just, there was the Indian guy who fucking knew that something about Lovecraft being...
Well, there was the fact that the point was that there was a cult that was still in existence today.
Yes, I guess.
Somehow this reporter chick who
was the worst reporter anything, ever.
Oh my God, she's such a shitty reporter. At one point he's handing her a diary of a woman who is now in the nut house because her grandmother was the one who had the footage, the fake footage,
right.
and he's handing her this diary, and she just kind of throws it down, and she's like, whatever. I'm like, okay, yeah. If you're a real reporter, you might want to at least look at it. It is a piece of history, if nothing else.
Yeah, that was like the beginning plot was that she's doing this Halloween fluff piece about H.P. Lovecraft, and I'm thinking, wait, is this for this Halloween or for next year's Halloween? Because you're shooting at the Castro Halloween party, which happens on Halloween.
Yeah, she even said to her boss at one point, I don't know if you made it that far, I think you did, when she was talking to the boss who had the little tiny desk in the corner of the room, and he's the big boss guy, and his desk is smaller than my desk at home, but she's talking to him, and she's like, you don't even need it until next Halloween. I'm like, okay. You filmed Halloween night this year so that you could make a spot, a 15-minute news spot for Halloween next year?
Okay. I think I got through that part, but I was distracted by my computer and not actually paying attention to the movie at points because it was killing me. I was so bored, I had to do something. So I think I was bouncing between looking at the screen and looking at my computer. So I remember vaguely that scene where she's talking to her boss, but I couldn't tell you what she said. Honestly, I don't. I watched.
It's okay. It's okay. You know what I say to anyone listening to this? Here's this. Just don't watch it.
No, don't.
We're both giving it a zero.
Yes.
Couldn't even finish it. So you know there's a zero there.
Oh yeah.
I finished it, but it was painful as hell. So you know there's a zero there. So just don't watch it. Yeah. None of this matters because you're not going to watch it. You're going to trust us.
Oh, please. It has like a 2-star rating on Netflix. I gave it a 1 because I couldn't give it a 0 on Netflix. But yes, this is a 0 out of 5. Do not watch this movie. It was fucking terrible. And it was fucking atrocious. This is the worst movie I've seen in a very long time. And I mean, I as I've said on the previous shows, I do tend to try and be a little gentle with independent horror films. Because they are low budget and they're being made by people who genuinely love the genre. I don't know who this director is, but I kind of want to punch him in the face. Because he just pissed all over H.P. Lovecraft. And here's my thing. If you want to make a movie about Lovecraft, do it small. Do something small. Don't H.P. Lovecraft, by the very nature of his stories, are very broad and very big and have really big concepts going on that you need shit tons of money to get the special effects to look good. That's just the way it is. I'm sorry. So do something small. There's actually an independent film that I did a review for that was a collection of shorts called Lovecracked. And it was goofy and funny, but it also had really good little Lovecrafty shorts in it, which were great because they were, a couple minutes long and they were loosely based around Lovecraft's story. That was great. But yeah, this movie, I was hoping and praying that, Cthulhu would come through my TV and eat my face, or the Fishmen of Innsmouth would come and drag me away. Just anything to make the pain stop. So, 0 out of 5. Fuck this movie. Don't watch it.
I was in search of the stop button.
Yeah, I know. In search of a plot. That's what this movie should have been called. You're right. All right. Well, that's enough of that nonsense. So let's get into our feature presentation, the 1970s.
Yeah, buddy.
Dunwich Horror.
And now our feature presentation.
The nights are darker. And night is when it happens in the Dunwich Horror.
Oh, come back. Old one. Princes of darkness. And repossess the earth.
The Dunwich Horror. Based on H.P. Lovecraft's terrifying tale of those who explore the unspeakable. Starring Sandra Dee, Dean Stockwell, Academy Award winner Ed Begley, Sam Jaffe. He believes the history of horrendipity written here. Love story of a girl looking to the future and a boy dedicated to the mysteries of the past. He invokes the unspeakable.
Yeah, Satha.
She invites it.
You're one of us now.
Deathless paradise of terror, where fear eternal lives. And the dead come to life.
I've never heard anything like that.
The Dunwich Horror, released in 1970. And the synopsis is, Wilbur Whately pops over to Arkham Miskatonic University to borrow the legendary Necronomicon and Sandra Dee. But little does anyone know, Whately isn't quite human. That's an incredibly weird synopsis. Thank you, IMDb. Directed by Daniel Haller, written by Curtis Hanson, Henry Rosenbaum, and Ronald Solosky, based on a short story by H.P. Lovecraft. Starring Sandra Dee as Nancy Wagner, Dean Stockwell, a very young Dean Stockwell with a kickin' mustache.
Oh, man, he was awesome.
And Ed Begley as Dr. Henry Armitage. So, if this is your first episode with us, we do things a little differently, or we started to do something a little differently last week, where we will give you the general synopsis of the movie, some vague thoughts on the film, and rating. And then from there on, we will do, you'll hear a spoiler warning. And then from there onward, it's open season. So if you have not seen the movie, you can pause it and watch it. It's on instant watch. And if you have seen it, then just continue on after the spoiler warning. So what did you think of The Dunwich Horror?
Well, I'll tell you right off the bat, there are three things about this movie that I love. One is Roger Corman producing
yes.
it. Two is made in 1969, yes. even though it was released in 1970. And three is... Oh, shit, I forget the third one. But no, well, I don't know. Just pick Sandra Dee.
Dean Stockwell.
Sandra Dee doing some... yes. Man, Dean Stockwell was awesome in this movie. And I hadn't seen this movie in years, and I was so excited to get to see it again. And it has that fantastic... I mean, you can tell without even looking when this movie was made. You know, you can tell just by it. First of all, it looks phenomenal. Yeah. I mean, the at least the copy that Netflix is has ownership of is beautiful. The colors are striking and bold. There are some fantastic dream sequences. It's very 1970-ish. And the score is
oh my
is
god, I love the theme. The score was amazing. I don't know why I recognized the theme, but as soon as it started playing, I was like, wait, I've heard this before. Why have I heard this before? But it's amazing. I have to agree. The production value is fantastic. It very much, like you said, it stands out as being a movie that definitely was made in the very late 60s, like 1969. It still has that 69 kind of look to it. Costumes mm-hmm. are great. Dean Stockwell's mustache and Jufro are amazing. Sandra Dee's in it, and that was kind of cool.
Obvious body double. I just want to throw that in.
Yeah.
I was kind of wondering, because that's something I never paid attention to in the past, but I paid attention this time, and I was like, I wonder. You know, because Sandra Dee is, she's known for being extremely wholesome, you know, and the fact that she said hell in this movie.
And she said sex. You know,
was like, oh my god, she said hell. Sandra Dee's never said that before. So it is kind of surprising. And of course, this was her last feature film role.
Really?
It was. And I wonder, you know, if there was a reason for that. I mean, like, I don't know. I don't know why it was, because she was still young.
Yeah.
So I don't know if she's just stopped acting altogether, or if maybe after she did that, like, she had ruined her rep and no one would touch her, or if, you know, she said to hell with it, I don't want to do anymore. I don't, you know, I don't know what the reasoning was. Yeah. But this was her last feature film role.
Wow.
And she played a college student, you know, so she was, you know, still pretty young. I don't think she was as young as they were attempting to portray her.
No.
But but, you know, she definitely wasn't old by any stretch of the definition there. So but anyway, so production values aside, which we both agree are amazing. Yeah. It looks and sounds beautiful. This film is a treat for the senses. I also like the story. I do. I think that it's very reminiscent of Rosemary's Baby.
Yes.
In a lot of ways. And which was like right. I mean, just before this movie. I mean, just before this movie. So it's kind of interesting. But I like it. I mean, that's the kind of thing that I like. This is the kind of thing when I was a kid growing up, you know, if it came on late night TV, my ass was in front of the TV, all the lights off, and I was watching it. And even though it has a little, this particular film has a few risque moments, not too serious, but
I honestly, I was surprised that this thing has an R rating, because
it doesn't. I didn't notice.
Yeah,
I didn't notice.
It's rated R. I was like, wow, this is rated R. And then like, there's one scene where there's naked breasts in it. And I was like, oh,
yeah, I barely see
exactly.
them. I mean, it's, you know, they're kind of a flash, and you can almost convince yourself that you didn't see them at all.
Very true.
You know? So that is surprising. I didn't realize it had an R rating.
I'm very surprised by it, but I can kind of understand for when it came out that it would have probably been an R just because of some of the language and, you know. But I got to say, I enjoyed this movie a lot. It dragged a little bit in parts. It had its moments of being a little slow. But the story was good. It was very much, it felt very much like a drive-in kind of movie that you would see on like a double bill back in the late 60s, early 70s type of, it was a very much a Roger Corman produced movie. It came across that way, but it also had that very awesome.
In all the good ways.
In all the good ways, exactly. It was like watching one of the AIP Poe pictures.
Oh, that was the third thing. Was AIP? Yeah. That was the third thing I love about it. As soon as I see the words Roger Corman and American International, I'm like sold.
Yeah, it's got that great aura of the early AIP pictures, like, you know, Pit and the Pendulum, stuff like that. It looks fantastic. The acting's actually pretty good, I gotta say. There are things in the story that are a little bit silly at times, and we'll bring that up in the spoiler section. But overall, I'd say I enjoyed the movie a lot. Like I said, it drags at points, but it's not bad. It's got its moments. It's definitely a good flick. Soundtrack is fantastic. Very, very, very late 60s type soundtrack. Almost funny how weird late 60s psychedelia soundtrack it is, but it works for the movie, I gotta say. And Dean Stockwell is, I actually had to look it up on IMDb when I started watching it, because I was like, wait, I recognize him. Why do I recognize him? And I was like, holy shit, it's Dean Stockwell. Because I know him originally from Quantum Leap.
I knew you were.
And then I saw him in Blue Velvet, which I fucking love. So I was like, he looked really familiar. Then I'm like, yeah, son of a bitch, it's Dean Stockwell. So, and he has an amazing, like I said, his mustache in this movie is just amazing.
Oh, it's a character in and of itself.
Yes.
You know, it has its own, I think it had its own trailer, you know, when they were filming the movie. shoot, I forgot what I was going to say. And this is a rarity for him, you know, a leading role.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I think he did. You know, he did a fine job. I've always enjoyed him, though.
Yeah, I've always thought he's a good actor. And I was.
And then, of course, there's Ed Begley, whom I did not realize was that much older than Ed Begley Jr. Like, he was really old. Yeah. You know, I guess he was just, you know, he was older when Ed Begley Jr. was born. I did not realize there was that much of an age gap. I wasn't expecting him to be that old, but he was pretty old. Well, not old, you know, but I mean, old.
Yeah. So, what would you rate this movie?
You know, I let me precipice that by this. But whoa, was that English? I think I'm speaking in tongues. it's like Exorcism of Emily Rose over here.
let me when we say talk about Lovecraft.
That's right. I'm going insane. let me say really quick that I can see where you might think that, you know, feel that it dragged a little bit. However, I did not. I was so enthralled by the visuals and by the sound that it, you know, I didn't notice that. I was just enjoying the even when nothing was really happening, I was just sort of enjoying the scenery. And I really don't have any complaints, really. I mean, this is the kind of movie that I can watch anytime, and I enjoy the hell out of it. I'm going to say throw it an 8 and be happy about it.
I would say, like I said, it for me, I felt it dragged a couple times, but the movie was very charming. Like, it had a very, just the whole package was very charming to me. I really enjoyed it for that reason.
It's a great word.
Yes.
That's a good word.
That was how I saw it. The soundtrack was great. The acting was good. The visuals were fantastic. It just had that like late 60s, early 70s charm that I really dig about certain movies like this. And the points where it kind of dragged, I was like, you know what, it drags a little bit, but it never bothered me. I never felt bored. I just was like, okay, this is going a little bit longer than, you know, there were parts where I was like, could you pick things up a little bit? But, you know, it kept going and it was fine. So I would recommend this. I would give it probably an 8. It was definitely worth the time to watch it. This is, I think, also maybe an hour and 45 minutes or so this ran, I think, something like that.
I actually didn't check. I usually check this time.
Yeah, I
didn't pay.
Forgot to write it down. I think it's about an hour and a half, hour 45 minutes. Yeah, like I said, I enjoyed it a lot. The acting is good. The story at times is a little bit shaky. The special effects are kind of funny at times because it's 1969, but it's all very charming, and it's very much a late night kind of TV movie you would probably see nowadays. And it's a lot of fun. So we both recommend it. We're going to play the spoiler warning, and then from there on, it's going to be open season for the Dunwich Horror. All right, so Dunwich Horror, and this is going to be the spoiler version of the synopsis or the story that we're going to be talking about and breaking the thing down a bit more. So
there's probably one word that would encapsulate all that.
Probably spoilers. I speak English well. Yes. So, as we said previously, we both really enjoyed this movie. I thought it was very charming. It had a lot of lower budget horror movies don't quite hold up very well just because they're low budget. And I don't blame that on, you know, necessarily the time that they were made. It's just that a lot of low budget movies don't necessarily always hold up well. But this one, I feel like it had enough good going for it. Like, the set designs were fantastic. The soundtrack was great. And like I said, the story at times, the movie opens and the professor just happens to have the Necronomicon. He's just walking around with it. He's like, oh, I have to go take this back to the library. I was like, fucking what?
Oh, that was cracking me up. He's like, here. Oh, and then he just hands it off. He's
oh, here.
Here, girly, you go take this back to the library.
You go take the Necronomicon back to the library. I'm going to go.
It's just the Necronomicon.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
what? It's like, you're this far away from Dunwich, and you're just like, oh, Necronomicon, not a big deal.
Oh.
That was funny. The hippie fucking dream sequence that Sandra Dee has was hysterical. Holy shit. I was rolling. That was just fucking hilarious. But this is very much a movie that is kind of dated at this point. Especially the conversation they have when they're out in the field and Dennis Stamp is like, so, do you like sex? And she's like, of course I'd like sex. And I'm like, oh my god, seriously, guys? It's so fucking, that was goofy as hell.
What do you feel about sex?
Yeah.
Sex is great.
Yeah, I know. I'm like, what? But yeah, I really enjoyed it. It was a very charming movie. The soundtrack was fantastic. Dennis Stamp was just fucking, that mustache was epic.
Who?
Huh?
I think he just called
Ian
him
Stockwell.
Dennis Stamp.
Ian Stockwell's who I'm talking about, not Dennis Stamp. Jesus Christ. Who the fuck is Dennis Stamp? Dean Stockwell is who I meant.
throughout all of that nonsense. I don't know who the fuck I was talking about. See, this is what happens. In Search of Lovecraft has ruined my brain.
It's made us both go crazy. I'm like, who? And you're like, huh?
What?
It's like I scared the shit out of you.
So I didn't realize I was calling him by the wrong name. Oh my god. And I'm not gonna edit any of that out either. I don't give a fuck.
Oh, wow.
But
woo, sex is great.
Oh man, this movie was so, and the old man was fucking hilarious.
The uncle or the doctor? The uncle. He
father, whatever he was. He was.
Oh, did I say uncle? God, yeah. What is wrong?
The fucking
grandfather, man.
He was funny. Go away. She's not here.
You know, Uncle Dennis.
Yeah.
Dennis Stamp.
I should name this episode, Who the Fuck is Dennis Stamp? Actually, I'm going to look it up now. They know.
I know Terrence Stamp. I know Dennis Weaver. I know Dennis Hopper. We were talking about Blue Velvet earlier.
Yes,
maybe.
Which Dean Stockwell is in. Dean Stockwell, Dean Stockwell, Dean Stockwell.
Who, by the way, and they keep showing, you know, he has sort of these mesmerizing eyes in Dunwich Horror that, you know, you just cannot turn away from, or you can basically, it never shows him working his mojo, but it just kind of shows his eyes and then cuts away to another scene and then comes back and then she's following him somewhere. So obviously he has done something.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. So Dennis Stamp, for those of you who know, some of you will probably get a kick out of this because it's kind of funny. Dennis Stamp was a former professional wrestler who appears in the film Beyond the Mat. And this is why this is so funny to me, because I just realized this now. There's a running joke amongst wrestling fans that Dennis Stamp, one of the parts of the movie, he's talking about why he's not going to be at this show because he wasn't booked. And it's supposed to be this guy's last match. And it's anyway, but the running joke is Dennis Stamp wasn't booked. And that's why I just thought of it. I don't know why I got him and fucking Stockwell mixed up. I don't know, because they don't look anything alike at all. But yeah, so Dennis Stamp was not booked, and he was not in the Dunwich Horror, but Dean Stockwell was. Oh, holy shit. Yeah, Dean Stockwell, some of the looks he has in this movie are so, like, I want to say he was overacting, but he wasn't. I think it was just the tone of the movie. It's kind of cheesy at points, and he's got those looks where he's like, he's got those crazy looks, and I'm just like, oh man. It really is his mustache. That's what it is. I can't take the mustache seriously. And when he's at the altar,
I can see that.
When he's at the altar with his hands up to his head, oh.
Well, that's how we greet each other in my house now. Dude, like you walk up to someone and you're like, I can't even fucking do it with a straight face. So what is it?
Yeah, I think it's Yogg-Sothoth.
Or something. I don't know. But we do the hand thing.
Yeah, that.
Yeah.
I gotta say, I fucking love this movie. This movie was great. I really.
Aw, hey.
I thought I wasn't gonna like it at first. Like at first when it started going and the music started playing, I was like, okay, it's an American international film, awesome. It's produced by Roger Corman, awesome. I was like, Dean Stockwell, why do I recognize that name? And I was like, okay, cool. And then, you know, it's going, and I'm like, oh, well, this isn't bad. And then it just, at the end of it, I was just like, that was fun. You know, it wasn't particularly, you know, the writing was okay. Some of the acting was a little silly. Some of the scenes were fucking hysterical. The monster thing, oh my god, that was hysterically funny.
It was killing me because I wanted to see more. I mean, it was like they put your head in a washing machine.
I know.
And just turn it on, and it was like, here, watch this, you know, because I just wanted to see just a glimpse of it. And I know that the reason that you don't get to see it is because it would be bad,
yeah.
You know.
Oh, yeah.
They just didn't have the ability to make it look good, so you just don't show it. And I fully respect that. And it works.
Oh, yeah.
I just, there were, what they did instead were these little, like,
flailing tentacle things.
Psychotic, yeah, and these little psychotic flashes, you know.
Yeah, this movie definitely is very, very heavy on the psychedelic imagery with the fucking flashing lights and the negative colored parts and just, oh my god. But I, like I said, I thought it was great. It was fucking hilarious. I can't
I'm drawing a blank on a lot of the story at this point because I watched it like Sunday. And in search of Lovecraft has rotted most of my memory of anything good for the past few days. But
when she drives the 40 miles to his house, yeah, which apparently is a really long way, and then she drives the 40 miles to his house, and then her car's broken down.
Because he removes the fucking thing, and he's like, right, I don't know anything about cars. Creepy look.
And she has to spend the night in someone else's black negligee that's see-through, and I was like, that's not normal.
I gotta say that. God, this movie promises Sandra D nudity so many times, it does not deliver.
No, it fails. It fails you. And even the parts where you get to see like the side ass, yeah, and the that's not even her.
And I was like the scene where she's on the altar and she's like writhing around, I was like, wait, is that her? Okay, that's her thigh, and I think that's the
side. You mean where she was like dry humping the Necronomicon? Yeah. Is that what you're referring to?
I'm like, I think that's her butt, I think. Like, okay.
But you know what I did is I looked at the hands, because I noticed earlier on, like when she was on the altar, that Sandra D had these really nice manicured nails and really slender, delicate, pretty hands. Well, then when I was looking at the body that was on the altar, and I noticed that, if you notice, they never showed her head attached to the body. And when the one time they did, her face was turned away. So they're very clever about this, but when I watched it, I was paying attention to the hands, and those were not Sandra D's hands. So I was like, "Oh, robbed!" I mean, it's not even nudity, and I guess they couldn't get her to do that much. Of course, we are talking about Sandra D here.
Yeah.
You know, like I said earlier, it was you know, they were hard pressed to get her to say hell.
Yeah,
I'm sure, or sex.
I know. That was what was so funny about it.
Oh, and then later on when she's like, well, you remember when I said, when you asked me about sex, I lied. And I'm like, what, you don't think it's great? That's what you lied about? You
and then he gets that look on his face like, excellent.
I knew.
Oh my God, Dean Stockwell in this movie, he's just...
He's perfect.
He's so perfect. He really is. It's like, if that was anybody else, I would say they were overacting. But he's so perfect in just like... being cheesy and hamming it up in this movie, that it's wonderful.
I love those close-up shots of his eyes. That cracks me up every time. It's like zoom in, you know, and there's some serious going on behind those eyes. It's great.
Oh my God.
And Stan, he's my hero.
Yeah. oh man. Dean Stockwell. Dean fucking Stockwell.
I'm just going to call you periodically and go, Dean Stockwell.
Yeah, I know, right?
And you're going to go, Razzmatazz, or Sokmaloff, or what is it? Fogtikoff. That's I don't know. I don't remember. Sog, whatever. I'll look it up.
Yeah. Anyway, but yeah, like I said, I can't remember a lot about the storyline for the movie, but I enjoyed it. I seem to think I've read the Dunwich Horror, but I don't remember. Honestly, because I've read a few Lovecraft stories, but
this, I think, had elements of other stories as well.
So.
I don't think it was straightforward Dunwich Horror, because I want to say it had elements of like Lurker in the Dark or something, but sort of like an amalgamation, but mostly Dunwich Horror.
Yeah, I kind of felt like when this based on a story by H.P. Lovecraft, I was like, right. Like, your Poe pictures were based on stories by Edgar Allan Poe. Loosely based on. Be a better description. But like I said, it was a charming movie. I enjoyed it a lot. There are a few other Lovecraft-type movies on Netflix that I almost watched instead of In Search of Lovecraft.
Did you hear what I said? I said Lurker in the Dark. That's not what I meant to say. I meant to say Lurker at the Threshold as well.
Oh, okay. I don't think I've read that one.
Ah, Jesus, I'm doing it too.
It's okay. But yeah, you know what? It was definitely worth checking out. You know what? Honestly, I don't even think we're going to bother with the spoiler tag for this one, because we didn't really spoil anything, because neither of us could particularly remember much about the movie other than we loved it.
Oh, no. I mean, I remember. I just don't. I mean, there's not really. You don't need to spoil it. You know, I mean, there's not. You can talk about it without really giving anything away,
yeah,
and easily.
Yeah, it's very much just it's your typical kind of Lovecrafty story of somebody's trying to bring back the Elder Gods, and there you go. And there's some.
And do they succeed? Do they not succeed? I won't tell you. You'll have to find out.
There's a couple twists and turns here and there, but it's sort of things that you, if you've watched any genre movie ever, you'll see them coming and you'll go, okay. But it's not an annoying kind of twist that you see coming. It's sort of like, oh, that makes sense. And like the ending, which I'm not going to reveal, I think it was very much a typical kind of, it made sense for the time.
Oh, kind of ending
that I was like, yeah, that totally makes sense.
Well, you know what it brought, what it immediately what I thought of was House of the Devil too. And it just
very and similar,
and just and just exactly how once again perfectly Ty West captured everything he needed to
Now that you bring that up, I would say that. Having watched House of the Devil first and now seeing this, I would say that he definitely was drawing from this type of movie, like that kind of, you know, late 60s, early 70s kind of Roger Corman schlock. Wonderful schlock, but schlock nonetheless. So, yeah, I would say easily this was an 8 for me. I loved the hell out of it. The music, I want to find the soundtrack because the soundtrack was fantastic.
Oh, it was amazing. I could just listen to it and watch it
and
all day and just as background.
Yeah, it was fantastic music. And it was one of those things that, like, it was immediately like, this sounds really familiar and I don't know why, but it's really good kind of music. And so I loved that about it. The fight scene that Dean Stockwell has when he's trying to steal the Necronomicon is hysterical.
Oh, wow. They were all over the fucking place. Look at they're tearing shit up in the library. And I'm like, worst security guard ever. Jesus. He was terrible.
I swear to God, it was like watching a Captain Kirk fight on Star Trek. It was just fantastic. But yeah, this movie, I think that this is kind of one of those movies that if you don't like classic horror movies like this, you're not going to enjoy it. Because the pacing is very much traditional, old, you know, late 60s kind of pacing. The acting is kind of goofy at times. The old man is fucking hysterical.
Yeah, he's great.
She's not here, and they walk up. Oh, here she is.
Damn it!
And his weird, like, walking stick fucking thing that he's got. What the hell?
I know. Oh, when he walked into the store, like when the doctor was story about him walking into the store, and I was like, and here he comes walking into the store, and I said, with an all day sucker, because that's what it looks like. He's walking around with this like road sign.
I know. Yeah, this movie is just goofy as hell. And there's like one, like I said, there's that one sequence where you see breasts for like a split second, and then it's gone, and then it's like, what? Did I just see boobs?
Yeah, I don't know. You can't prove it. You can't. It's
like there's
it.
So much flashing light and the flailing tentacles and. Oh man, like I said, it was a great movie. It was a lot of fun. Probably one of the better kind of late 60s.
And the setting was beautiful too. Yeah. You know, you've got the beach area, you know, in the ocean, like up on the hill. It was beautiful. Oh.
Like, I gotta say, this would probably, like, because if you've done any research on American International Pictures and Roger Corman stuff, his movies were typically done really quickly, within like a week, if not less. So I would say if this movie was made in about that amount of time, which it probably was, they did a hell of a job. The story, like I said, story has its issues at times, but it's very charming. It's not an obnoxious issue. It's all very charming, unlike In Search of Lovecraft, which was fucking terrible. Ugh.
Yeah, no, there's nothing grating about it. There's nothing annoying about it. There's nothing... I just, nothing about this film bothered me, and I had a good time all the way through.
Yeah, it was very much,
And Will, again, it has, I think the rewatchability on this is very high.
Yeah, you know, I would definitely say this is one I would probably pick up. I think it's available through, I think it's one of the Midnight Classics or Driving Classics by MGM or whoever has it. That line of movies that they release, of old horror movies, I think it's available through that. Because I looked on, I think it's the cover that IMDb has for it.
Which is a phenomenal cover.
Yes, with Dean Stockwell.
Oh my God.
The thing with the hands.
I love that. And it's just like old novel art from like around the same time. It just, when they actually used real artists, you know.
Yeah, I really like the cover that Netflix has, the really nice blue poster with the monster on it and Sandra.
Oh, I'm sorry, that's the one I was talking about. One's... You said IMDb.
Yeah,
okay.
Sorry. Yeah, the Netflix cover has the fantastic art with Sandra Dee and the promise of boobs and the monster you get to see that you don't actually see in the movie. And then the...
Yeah, that is an
that
amazing
looks
cover.
That great. The IMDb cover is the DVD art, which is kind of generic and not great, but it's kind of fun. It's not wonderful by any means compared to the Netflix artwork, which is way better, but it's not bad. So... That's about all I can say about this movie at this point, because I'm, like I said, I'm totally drawing a blank on most of it, other than it was great. So, next week, for episode 14, we will be beginning our first retrospective with the Sleepaway Camp series. So we will be watching Sleepaway Camp. It is, I think, the first one's available on Netflix. I don't know. Possibly.
No, I don't know. I've never looked because I haven't.
Yeah,
but,
I seem to think the first one might be available on Netflix. If it's not, fucking go find a copy. It's super cheap somewhere. And we will be doing... It came from the instant queue. We will be doing Grave Encounters because I want to re-review it because the review on the first episode sounds like shit.
And I haven't seen
it. You haven't seen it. So we will be doing that.
And that one is available on Netflix.
Yes, it is. Everything that we do for our Instant Queue segment is available on Netflix.
Oh, yeah, duh. Oh, God.
This is what happens when we do Lovecraft episodes. We lose our minds. Holy shit.
Man, this is our first episode at the new network, too.
I know.
People are going to think I'm a raving lunatic. I'm seriously not.
We're usually much more coherent and, you know, not crazy sounding, but this is what happens when we watch a really shitty movie and then have to talk about it. So it makes us go crazy.
It's true.
So next week, episode 14, will be the beginning of the Sleepaway Camp retrospective. We will be doing so all of May will be Sleepaway Camp. So you'll get Sleepaway Camp, Sleepaway Camp 2, Unhappy Campers, Sleepaway Camp 3, Teenage Wasteland, The God Awful Return to Sleepaway Camp. And we will be doing a very special short segment about Sleepaway Camp 4, The Survivor, the unfinished Sleepaway Camp sequel. So, yeah, technically the numbering is... Anyway, we'll talk about the technical numbering of the series when we get to it. But, yeah, so check out Sleepaway Camp for next week. That one we will be spoiling the shit out of. And if you haven't seen it by now... That movie's been spoiled by everybody, but we're still going to put a spoiler tag on it next week because we're nice like that. So, any final thoughts you want to say, Jamie, before we go?
Just stay away from In Search of Lovecraft. Forgot for all this holy.
It made us go
be in
crazy.
Search of another movie. That's
in search of a plot.
Because you see what it does to your brain. It is not good.
Yes, it
not good.
It destroyed our brains for our first episode on a new network. God damn you.
It was Cthulhu was behind it.
No, I don't think, even Cthulhu's not that evil. I don't know who's behind that, but that just, anyway, the less we talk about that movie, the better. Maybe it'll wear off. God.
Well, I hope everyone has enjoyed our first episode here as actual residents of the palace. Yep. You know, my room is very nice, by the way. Loving this palace. Have you seen the pool? It's awesome. And I hope that, you know, after you listen to this one, you'll come on back and listen to some more because we have fun.
And episodes 12, 11, 10, and 9 are all very good. They feature both of us. Everything from 8 backwards is me solo. So if you want to hear...
Still very good.
Yes, they are good. Recording quality on the first 3 is not great, but that's another point in and of itself. The show should be coming up through iTunes through the... Archive is already on the Monster feed. I believe by the time this show goes up, the official Horror Palace Devour the Podcast feed will be available through iTunes. I just sent in the thing to get rid of the old feed. So, and if you're listening from If you're picking this up from one of the blogs, you can still download the show from there, but I would suggest you subscribe through iTunes to the new feed, which will be linked on the page, et cetera, et cetera. Check out the devourtheblog.wordpress.com. You can read some of the stuff I've done there. I haven't updated it in a while because I've been working on the show. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at ddelamorte, and Jamie is at maven1974. I post all kinds of random weird shit on there. Amusing commentary, bitching about terrible, terrible TV commercials like Battleship. Holy shit, that looks terrible. I occasionally do Twitter commentary during bad movies, but not very often because sometimes I can't do it because I'm just too focused on how terrible the movie is. But I will be trying to do that a little bit more, doing live Twitter commentary of bad films, because I find it fun.
I do too.
And yeah, I think that's about it. Our email addresses are available. You'll hear it at the end of the show, and it'll be in the show notes as always. So thank you for listening, and if you're one of our new listeners, I greatly apologize for the insanity that took place today. I blame it entirely on In Search of Lovecraft. Go see watch the Dunwich Horror from 1970. It's awesome. Dean Stockwell's mustache is amazing. I swear to God.
I got its autograph.
His mustache deserves its own credit on the film. Speaking of the credits, that's what something I wanted to bring up before we go. I really liked the credit sequence at the beginning. I really dug that animated credit sequence. It was awesome.
Oh wow, and that was, I did too, and that was very 60s yeah. too. It was brilliant the way they sort of bled into each other, and yeah, there's a little story going on.
Very similar to the credit sequence in Blackula.
Yes.
Again, another movie I really like, and we will be doing in the coming months. We're rolling out some new formatting stuff for the show. So next episode will be, like I said, the beginning of our Sleepaway Camp retrospective. In the coming months, we'll be doing a Blaxploitation month. We'll be doing a Stephen King month at some point. We'll be doing a Clive Barker month at some point. We've got Hellraiser's retrospective in the works at some point. Nightmare on Elm Street, Friday the 13th. All kinds of different stuff in the works for later episodes. So stick with the show. And yeah, that's about all I gotta say.
We'll see you next time.
Bye, everybody.
To contact Devour the Podcast, you can email us at cenobitedave@gmail.com. That's cenobitedave@gmail.com. Or maven1974@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter at ddelamorte. That's at ddelamorte. Or at maven1974. You can like us on Facebook at facebook.com/devourtheblog. Or visit the site devourtheblog.wordpress.com.